Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I'm so excited. As all of you know, I was kicked off of Twitter a long time ago and everywhere else, basically. But I restarted Twitter. And the cool part about starting from zero is that I found some new awesome people that have a lot to say and are looking for solutions and are done with choosing sides. My guest today is incredibly successful in many realms, and he is doing just that. And I'm honored to have Anomaly on with me today. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you. I've heard a lot
really
of good things, and
I've seen your
name around there a lot, so it's nice to meet and chat.
I know, and I've seen you a lot. Now, I want my audience to understand a little bit about your background, because it's pretty phenomenal, and you've done a lot of this on your own, and we're at a phase right now, I even saw you posted today, where people feel demoralized, helpless, like there's nothing they can do, and you're the example of there's a lot you can do just being yourself and going out there. So can you tell my audience a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. I started out just doing hip hop in 2008. I started posting YouTube videos. I always saw that as a big, you know, out there even before politics, because if you come from a small town or nobody cares about you in your community, now there's this thing where you can compete just by putting yourself out there. So I think it's been huge for politics, news, you know, spurred a lot of careers. And as dark as some of the stuff is, it really has been amazing. Even against censorship, people like you and me have been able to build platforms and audiences. So I saw that with rap, and I started getting into news in 2016 because I just saw Bernie and Trump against Hillary and how it was just like, no Bernie, no Trump, just Hillary. She's the one. And I saw how all big tech was kind of colluding even back then to just make it seem like it wasn't even possible and it was over. And actually, I saw them do that to Ron Paul successfully back in the day. Instead of giving him a lot of attention like they gave Trump, they just ignored him and acted like he didn't exist. And it kind of worked. So that's what got me into this. And then I say what I do now is news analysis. I'm not like for the next election. I mean, I don't care what people are doing, but I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm just trying to call it like I see it and analyze the news and what's going on.
Yeah, and you're doing a great job. And also, I want people to know that are watching this, that you, and I'm just saying this for real because I was listening to your music really transcends everything. You would know, I mean, like you really are an amazing musician as well, which just says a lot about, you know, that you're interested in all different things and you clearly have a gift. So I'm glad that you're bringing it to this realm because we have a problem right now. My belief, and I come from a similar thing, I'm a big Ron Paul person myself, but my belief is that our country has been, our government at least, has been captured by an oligarch of billionaires that are aligned globally, and that America is in very serious trouble. And when I see all the back and forth and arguing about, you know, be it Trump DeSantis or RFK or whatever, I think like, it's not even the point anymore. I really feel like the problem is way bigger than that, and that the division or illusion of choice that people are picking sides still and doing this is a total distraction. And you seem to be putting out something similar. So what is your 40,000 foot view of what is really going on in America right now?
Yeah, well, with that, I really want to say, like, I think our ancestors, like, I can't speak for everyone's, but I'm guessing people's grandparents and parents worked really hard. Like my grandfather, he said he used to have to make his underwear out of potato sacks in Italy, and he came here, where I feel like times are not so easy per se. They're different because of technology, but we've kind of lost that moment of being the change we want to see, where I feel like in this country, not to knock people, et cetera, but we have a huge pharmacy pill problem. You know, they're bombarding us with pharmacy drugs. We have a huge obesity problem. And a lot of people, although the food is really bad quality, and I think it is, they are responsible for that. Also, the self-accountability that we need to have, if we can't even fight corruption in our own lives, how are these people going to do it? So I feel like the reason that both parties get away with what they do is because the people are not as tough as they used to be. So I think that, you know, everybody's kind of addicted to the narrative. Like the left, they couldn't articulate for years why they didn't like Trump. Like nothing made sense. I'm like, I get if you don't like him, but your narrative isn't adding up and you're going to vote that way just because you don't like. And now I feel like people have gotten a little lazy on the right, to be honest, where I don't care if they like Trump or DeSantis, but some people's reason why doesn't really make sense. And I feel like so much fighting with the left, it's like, you know, the left's in my opinion, kind of easy to beat now, because it's like winning against a kindergartner on a Fisher Price net and saying you're like Michael Jordan. Like, yeah, you won, but that's not. So, you know, I do think that there are conversations to have around Trump, DeSantis, left and right, obviously. But, you know, you do see how it kind of works. They got, you know, millions of people fighting over Trump and DeSantis every day on Twitter. But the real like boycott that actually kind of made a difference, whatever it was, the Target Bud Light, that was when Trump and DeSantis people that fight on Twitter all day came together and actually did something in their own lives. And despite the fact that they argue every day, they're, you know, intuition told them that I'm going to not buy these products. And that's the type of stuff that actually makes a difference, in my view, at least.
And it wouldn't have made a difference if people didn't all. And I believe that this is also a lot of the left of center people that feel like they're orphans. And the idea of the so-called, I don't believe either party really exists. I'm a big George Carlin believer that it's an illusion of choice. And as long as we continue to pick sides, we're picking the wrong side, especially right now. But I do believe, and I think you put this out there a lot, which is why I follow you and I really like what you have to say, is kind of left of center and right of center. And I'm talking in the middle. People really agree a lot more than we are being told or manipulated to believe. There is no majority that believes far right or far left, but we are told that those are the two factions fighting, where I think that's a total fraud. And if we don't start looking at the things that we have in common and we do agree on, which is what you're talking about, the boycott, what couldn't have just been people on the right. It had to have been people left of center as well, or it wouldn't have made an impact. And where we are right now, I also think is, I'm glad you brought up addiction, because I feel like mainly because of social media, certainly, I was off Twitter for 2.5 years, and then you come back on, you're like, wow, people really are jumping to fight. And I'm leaving New York City, but even here on the streets, you know, New York, you grew up kind of around here, you can't avoid other people, strangers, you're surrounded all the time. And there's kind of a sense of people are addicted to conflict, and addicted to chaos, and addicted to arguing, and therefore nobody's listening to anybody. And we're at a place where we really have to like leave the party nonsense outside and come together as like, what do we want for America? Do we even have a choice? And I feel like we have to facilitate a conversation of what do we American citizens want for this country? Because if we don't get together and decide, it's going to be decided for us.
Right. And I think it's good to, I agree, like create your own narrative in the sense of, I'll give an example. I follow a basketball page or a sports page. It's called Bleacher Report. They just talk about sports, and they were trying to push the WNBA and Brittany Griner and like the trans sports or whatever it was, or like, I guess she was saying that she's okay with trans athletes or something in those lines. And all the comments were against it. And this is not a right-wing page or a conservative page. Everyone from every country was like, yo, stop trying to push the WNBA on us. This is getting too much. And now they block the comments on some posts like that. So this shows that this is actually a massive winnable issue. But the thing is, I think a lot of conservatives, they don't know how to pitch it. And they're kind of annoying and cringe and sometimes lack even maybe compassion when they're explaining. I'm not telling people to cave their values, but there is a way to get people on your side. You know, Matt Walsh, as maybe someone consider him extreme in his views, I've had multiple Democrat friends share his documentary with me and be like, yo, this is crazy, because of how he did it. He kind of pulled back and let them just reveal themselves instead of being so overly like harsh about it. And that woke up a lot of people. It's a great documentary. So I think that strategy is kind of part of it, where this is kind of concerning me with the right is because of, you know, and I'm not blaming Trump for this because he did a lot of good stuff, but it's like, you know, with him, it's kind of like my way or the highway. I'm going to wake up, say this about 8 different people. It's funny. It's entertaining. But at the end of the day, people don't have to like you and agree with you. And I think a lot of supporters adopted this thing where I'm like, hey, I agree with you, but I don't feel like the kids are listening. And they're like, shut up, liberal. And I'm like, I'm not a liberal. I'm just saying 80% of the kids hate you and they're not getting this message. So let's try to get it to them. And they don't want to do it because they kind of have this, who cares if people agree with me? It's like, well, culturally, that's why we're getting just bamboozled by the left, is because they know how to manipulate and we don't know how to successfully counter it. So that's kind of what I see, is like, these are massive winnable issues. It's just some people know how to get people on their side and others don't.
Yeah. I mean, what I've been watching too, because I think the whole thing is a distraction. I also believe that, you know, we're dealing with, like you said, on the other side, this is a machine. I don't believe it is an American machine. I believe that it's the multinational corporations, the public-private partnership, the banks. You just did a good show on, which I've done many, on BlackRock and Vanguard and their ridiculous amount of control. But they also, Larry Fink is the creator of the fraudulent ESG score. He's on the board of the World Economic Forum. He's on the board of the Council of Foreign Relations. I believe BlackRock, they're already, BlackRock functions somehow in the CCP without any oversight, or that's what they say. And nobody else in the whole world can. So, you know, we have a oligarchy, I think, of billionaires, and they have a lot of money and a lot of power. And they controlled, as we've all found out from the Twitter files, even though you and I already knew this, that it was coming from the top, the censorship and everything. So what I do like about you, and I think you have a good opportunity to really be a force for change on for younger people, because you are right. That younger generation, not only are they being, indoctrinated, and I believe this has a lot to do with, I always pinpoint something called Teach for America that happened. You were probably very young. I was probably, I'm probably 10 years older than you or something, but I remember Teach for America was I didn't know at the time, a Soros-backed group that was pushing for teachers in inner city schools, saying that they couldn't get enough teachers for inner city schools. So they had these new programs. Some of the Weather Underground people were involved because they all ended up in academia. And I believe that a lot of what's going on in our schools and the indoctrination, LGBTQ, the gender stuff, is really about creating a generation of children that are enforcers for this dystopian kind of track and trace surveillance future. Because right now, people our age aren't going to treat their fellow citizens as enemies. But like you're saying, we have a generation, I would say, mid-20s and lower, that really don't have perspective. How do we address that from the side of, being American citizens, believing in this country, and not believing this country is, as they're all growing up being told that communism or Marxism is really a better way.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that's hard to do. And I don't think it's easy, but I do often point it out where reacting is one thing, right? Reacting to what the left does, but then figuring out how to fix it and counter it is more difficult. Yeah. I try to use this as an analogy of like, if you wanted to get a tree down, but you're just like taking the leaves off and then the leaves keep growing back and you're losing. Cause it's like, in order to get the tree down, you got to chop it from the bottom. You can't just like pull the leaves off. And I see that with a lot of the stuff where I know you got to point out what they're doing to the kids. I'm fine with that. But like half of my Twitter feed is like gay propaganda, and it's coming from right wing accounts that just share it all day. I went to a parade recently that wasn't a pride parade, but it was a parade for military and veterans. And there were kids there, and it was like, oh, I want to be a firefighter. I want to be a police officer. It was like classic America stuff where the kids are like, the mayor's throwing stuff at them and the kids like, oh, this looks so cool. I want to be like them. I want to play the drums. And to me, that's a good way to do it. It's like if you react to the pride parade every day for a month, but you don't have your own parade of your own values and making it cool for the kids, you're losing. You're reacting. And this is what the left is masterful at. With Trump for 3 years, they did the Russia collusion thing. And although Trump ended up victorious in the sense of they didn't have him on anything, he really lost and the Democrats won because everybody spent 3 years defending themselves against that, even though we had the Senate, the House, and the presidency, and nothing was done, and then people will just say, oh, it was just Paul Ryan. Not really. It was all of them. And, that's how the left wins. They just kind of like waste our time and know how to like, even if we lose, we still made you just spend so much energy defending instead of kind of creating your own narrative. So I think with the kids, they think a lot of this stuff is cringe. I'm 33. I'm not even that young anymore, depending how you see it. Maybe I am, maybe I'm not, but I'm even kind of getting cringed out by some of the stuff where I'm like, I agree with what you're saying, but if I even think it's cringe, so do the kids. So how do you get them to think that you're the cool one? I think that's kind of the issue. And, a lot of Republicans, not all, because there's a lot of cool people that I follow, but I feel like the narrative that I've seen is like, screw you, we don't care, and we're not even trying to appeal. Like, you should just agree with us. But that's not how it works. That's not how your 20s work. And honestly, a lot of voters don't know that much. They're just kind of going off of instinct and little things that they see. So I'm guilty of this as well. Sometimes I talk to people like they know everything about politics, but they really don't care. So it's like you're hearing all these words and it's just like, what is he even talking about? So sometimes to get those people, you do have to be thoughtful in your approach, which it seems like the left is masterful at being tricky. And the right kind of has this like, screw you, whatever. If you don't get it, you don't get it. It's like, well, that's why everything's kind of shifting, is because, we dropped the ball for like 30 years and now we're trying to pick it all back up.
Right. And what you're saying is so important. I hope everyone's getting this, is that we're not doing enough to change on our side, or I don't really think that there's sides. I think it's all a fraud. Honestly, I really am at a point where I'm positive it's a controlled, captured uniparty and that they're all owned or blackmailed or whatever. They're just not working for us. And it goes all the way. And it's because of what you just said, because for 30 years, they dropped the ball for some reason. And this is awesome. But I talked to a lot of people who are retired vets, retired cops, all of that, even just in general. And a lot of these people say, well, I already did my part. And I think, no, if you had done your part, we wouldn't be here, is the truth. You just say it just it became so comfortable to not be involved. And now people wonder what happened. And we really do have to engage. And I think that's really important what you're saying. And everyone out there should be thinking about how they can do it. How are we attracting the youth to conservative or moral or whatever our thing is? We're not really doing it. Like that thing that you just said about parades, it's so important. If there's a gay pride parade in your area, why aren't there a bunch of people over at the American Legion and like a bunch of like, you know, cops and vets and everything putting on a similar parade? Like, wouldn't that be smarter? And that's a great way to think of it. The other thing you talk about a lot, which you know from the inside out, you've been doing this a long time, is the propaganda. And you know, at this point, if people, but there are still a lot of people who watch CNN and think if the New York Times and Washington Post say it, it has to be true. And like you said, a lot of people really, we're involved in this because we do this. We have shows, we do this every day. We commentate on what's going on. Most people don't really care. And though they are starting to because things are affecting them, I still think that the propaganda is so obvious and out of control, but most people don't really recognize it. I look at it and I say, if you're emotionally reacting to something on the news and you keep seeing the headline over and over and it's making you feel a certain way, you're probably being propagandized. For your point of view, what do you make of, like, what are the signs to you when you see a story? Because you're pretty good at cutting through the distraction and the propaganda to like what really should be the top news, which seemingly never is unless somebody on your level, somebody doing having a show pulls it out and then it goes wild. But what do you see as like the propaganda formula that they're using? Because that's a big problem too, cutting through that and getting people to focus on what really matters. Because I guess now we're going to have the Wannar von Braun alien invasion. So people will eat that up, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think before Trump got elected, I just noticed that like Google and Washington Post, and New York Times, I just noticed they'd all put out the same thing in the same day and it didn't have a lot of meat to it. During Trump, I think the secret that they were using was like anonymous intelligence officials. So it's like CNN would drop a story that an anonymous intelligence official said, and then they'd all piggyback off it, even though if you read the article, it didn't really make sense. Nice. Now, you know, they're starting with their like, you know, Mexican neo-Nazis are like invading and like, you know, someone had actually tried to like tie me to that because I'm part Puerto Rican and what? They were trying to like, and I'm like, yo, this is crazy. Like, I don't mind if you call me like dumb names that aren't real, even though I'm not, but like to try to tie me to like violent events. And I think that's what they did to Libs of TikTok and Tim Pool, where it's like this person had a manifesto with them. So now trying to blame commentators and podcasters that they can't completely control for events. And it didn't even really make sense because not that it matters, but for this, it does. Like the Libs of TikTok lady, I believe she's Jewish. So it's like you had a Nazi that was like obsessed with a Jewish woman, you know, posting TikToks. I mean, maybe that's true, but it seems very odd and how they're trying to piggyback and push this. So I see that kind of as like a new narrative. And, you know, with the shooter that was, I think, trans or in Nashville or was it Tennessee, like that manifesto they hid. And I didn't necessarily care because I'm like, I don't know if I even really want to see it. But the fact that they're hiding that, but the second that this other one happens, they're blaming Tim Pool and Libs of TikTok, like something. What did that other person have? Maybe did she have left wing people? And are we going to play these games? I don't think anyone's to blame, because if you're Tim Pool, Libs of TikTok, yourself, myself, at a certain point, you're like a music artist that's reached 100 million people, where it's like if a shooter listens to Drake, is Drake responsible? You know, this is kind of a crazy narrative at a certain point. So I think that's what I see that they're doing now. And I do think more now than ever that a lot of people are aware of it. So, you know, people do fall for it, but I think there's a growing group of people that are extremely passionate that see right through it.
Yeah. And I think more and more of them are starting to realize that we're also being distracted by a false narrative that you know, you have to pick a side. I like seeing more and more people saying, I think both sides are corrupt to the core. And, but that brings us back to, I'm sure you know about it. I talk about it a lot on the show that Yuri Bezmenov, he was the defector from the KGB, had a great interview with G. Edward Griffin in the 80s, where he warned about what I believe is going on right now, that there's been an infiltration and it like demoralization, dehumanization, normalization, which we're in, and then crisis. And it's like, we can avoid the crisis if we all just start being living in truth. But so many people are not involved. There's a Rent, this woman that I really was inspired by all my life. She said that in Germany, it wasn't the convinced Nazis or the committed communists that were the problem. It was the apathetic Germans that allowed what happened to Germany. And I feel very much like we are at a place where we have way too many apathetic Americans. Or do you think that they're just not being either mobilized or that they're creating a false majority? Because I've been all around this country and I have yet to sit next to somebody that thinks that our country is functioning properly. Most people, whether they're left or right, they just think DC is a cesspool of corruption, and but they still feel helpless. What are some solutions that people can actually be implementing into their own, you know, everyone has a you know, sphere of influence, even if it's just their family or their, you know, right. their kids, other parents when their kids are playing soccer or whatever. But what should people, what are good, you're good at solutions. What are some solutions people should implement?
I think self-awareness and self-accountability is everything, because it's like, if you're not actually enjoying your life, working hard, you know, being the person that you want to see, then I think that that's everything. And what you're saying with apathy is not good, and being ignorant is not good. But then sometimes when people are like so political and it's their whole life, it consumes them and they're not even right. Like, how many millions of left-wing activists are there that their whole life is activism and they're so much better than everyone else, but you know, they'd be better off just like watching sports because they're not even right. So when you're talking about the Uniparty, I want to mention a few things. The left before Trump came around, they were the ones that were calling out the lobbyists way more than Republicans. And Republicans were more like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's capitalism and left. Now they don't care about lobbying at all. They don't care that Joe Biden's lobbied. They don't care about Big Pharma, which is the biggest lobbyist in Washington. So somehow Trump, like Men in Black, wiped their memory and their whole movement's like totally useless. Not only are they wrong about almost every issue, but they don't even have the conviction to stand up for the few things that they used to be right for. And now they're like the party of war and Big Pharma. And then you get to the right, it's easy to kind of fall in this trap of, well, the left is so stupid and fake that I must be good. And it's like, definitely better. And I, you know, I argue with right wingers a lot, but I kind of see this sort of thing of like, okay, they get the left to just hate the right, and they get the right to just hate the left, and both sides just assume that they're right. And something that, you know, Biden, Obama, and Trump didn't do, which is like big, you know, reeling in Big Pharma, it's difficult, but Trump hired a pharmacy executive, Alex Azar, to run HHS, and he hired Scott Gottlieb to run FDA, who after FDA, he ran off to Pfizer because he was always a Big Pharma shill. And when I say this sort of stuff, a lot of Republicans kind of just make excuses for it. And they say like, well, that's, so it's like, I'm like, do you guys have a fetish for getting scammed? Because in general, I'm not saying you can't vote for them, but if you don't use your vote for leverage to be like, hey, I will vote for you, but hire some people who are actually going to take on the corruption in Big Pharma instead of hiring their, like a lot of what happened, in my opinion, was because he gave the keys to the castle to Big Pharma in 2016. But when you say that sort of stuff, people get mad because it's like, well, he's not the left, or I got to fight over this and that. And I'm like, this is how DC operates. It's like they give you some characters, they give you some of it, what you want, and neither side is willing to hold their side accountable because either they're the left and they just want to beat Trump, or they're the right. And in my view, they like Trump so much that they're not willing to give him the same treatment as other politicians. So they're basically like, business wise, they have no leverage. My leverage is I'm not endorsing Trump or DeSantis. I don't think either of them deserve my endorsement, but I'm trying to challenge them. I'm glad RFK is in the race. I don't think he's perfect and I don't trust him either. But the fact that he's going so hard at Big Pharma. Trump today put out a Big Pharma thing where he's talking about, you know, autism and like pharma pills and stuff. And he hasn't talked about that since 2015. So I think the fact that there's competition is making Trump and all of these people like try to one up each other. And that's a good thing. So yeah. I see it, you know, just like the left is so fake and dumb that the right needs to remember that, yeah, they are, but also we got to not get lazy, because that's exactly what happened to them. They just think they're so much better than you. And then they became so much worse. The same thing could happen. And real quick, Hillary, her 2016 campaign was, it's me, it's my turn. I'm the one. And it was so arrogant that it ended up failing her. With Trump, I think he'll probably win the primary, but in the main election, a lot of people don't like him still. So if his attitude is like, you owe me your loyalty, I'm the one, without really trying to work to be the best, it's a very arrogant campaign process. So that's just my opinion as a voter.
No. And I think you have to be very honest with that. First of all, I am very excited that RFK Jr. is in it. I've done many, many shows on, I say our country needs an American Anonymous recovery program, because our country, they always say in AA, you're only as sick as your secrets. And I say our country is terminal if we're as sick as our secrets, because all the way back to JFK forward, there's been cover up after cover up, no accountability, criminal activity. I believe Bush, Clinton, Obama, they're all involved in the same, you know, cycle. I think they're all on the same team at the end of the day. And we, the people of the United States, actually are supposed to be the government and have power. And yet we've kind of let that go by picking sides and being distracted. And the one thing that you're saying that's really important, and I feel the same way, is I wish that Trump would, if this is his plan, A, it does appear that he's hired a lot of people that were around him in 2020, and they're acting as if it's still 2020, and it's not. The one thing that we can't take away is that the persecution of Donald Trump to every single person that's honest on this planet has been unprecedented and really just kind of sick and demoralizing. I think this lunatic in Georgia is going to indict him. They want to charge him with insurrection to keep him off the ballot. I believe that it's going to fail, but it's going to be chaos again. They don't care how much chaos they put this country through. They don't care. It's really got to do with a very abusive media above all, but there, like you've proven, I say all the time, it's really, the media is totally controlled as well. But now we're at a place, something is happening, and I'd like your take on it. This argument, it's going on. We have Comer and Grassley up there talking about this disclosure from a very an FBI source that is very, you know, nobody can argue with. This is a credible person. They've used him before. It's very damaging. So $5 million here, like we haven't all seen Hunter Biden's laptop. And they're up there talking, and Grassley's like 86 years old and saying, I'm going to hold Ray in contempt. And I'm like, you saw it. So just what do you care? Just tell people what it says and let them hold you in contempt. So to me, don't be a coward. And they're all talking back and forth. And I'm thinking, we pay the salary of the FBI. We pay for all these investigations. We pay for these ridiculous kabuki theater, hearings that go nowhere. Nobody cares. We're the ones that deserve the answers. So they're still doing this. This is why it's a uniparty. If Grassley has the evidence, he's an old man, then fight for your country and stand up and be a hero and just tell us what it says, regardless of the consequences to you. So how do you feel about that? Because some person on Facebook, Twitter said, well, God, to think that we, the people, have any power, or, you know, that talking about that we pay their salaries. Well, we do. There is no money in the government. It's all our money. What are your thoughts on these people? They want to do another kabuki theater hearing with Durham or this guy? Just tell us.
Right. I agree with you 100%. Like, I've had enough of like Jim Jordan grills somebody in Congress. I've seen it 100 times. He's a great speaker, but nothing ever happens. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, I see the Republican Party, it's like Tom and Jerry, where, you know, I use this example a lot, where like Tom always chases Jerry and he like almost gets him every day, but it never happens, because once it happens, the show's over. So I feel like Republicans are just like professional losers, where it's like, dude, we've had 100 hearings. You've done absolutely nothing. They're indicting Trump for things that are way less than you have evidence for. Like, what are you guys really doing? And with Trump himself, as much as he got persecuted, which is true, you know, I heard recently he was on Hannity, and Hannity asked him about Christopher Wray and whether he kind of like regrets hiring him. And Trump made the statement that the reason he hired Christopher Wray as FBI director was because Chris Christie recommended it to him. And the Democrats liked Chris Wray too. So he thought it was a good idea to listen to Chris Christie and the Democrats. That's his reasoning. And it's one of those things that's hilarious, because like, before Trump did that, he bashed Chris Christie on social media. After, he's calling him sloppy now. It's hilarious and probably true, but it's like a clown show to me. It's like, you hired a guy because Chris Christie told him, but you're like fighting Chris Christie the same way Chuck Grassley's fighting the left. Like, to me, everybody kind of sees it as like, it's everyone but Trump. And me, I kind of put him in that category too, where I think he's more entertaining. You'll get more real stuff. I think he's better on foreign policy than them. But I kind of put him in the same bucket of like, you know, I stood up for you 1,000 times during COVID. I was disappointed in you, Ted Cruz, all of these people. So I stood up for you 100 times. I risked everything for it. You kind of fell short. And now I'm supposed to like think that you're going to take on the intelligence communities when you hired the guy that Chris Christie told you to. So, yeah, I mean, with the hearings, it's like, I'll believe something when I see it. I've seen Jim Jordan grill 1,000 people, but it's like, to me, it's like a, you know, it's like a soap opera because nothing ever happens. And like you said, with the laptop and I mean, they got so much stuff. It's insane. They have 1,000 times more on them than they have on Trump. On Trump, it's like he hit a woman in the butt with like a newspaper in 1954 or something. And you know, they have nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the same thing with the Clintons. I mean, the Clintons are the worst. I've done many shows. You can take it back to Mena, Arkansas, and, you know, Barry Seal all the way to today with crimes the Clintons have been involved in, let alone the old Arkansas list, let alone Bill Clinton was obviously, we have the flight records 27 times on Epstein Island, never been questioned. So there's like a whole nother level of the Clintons. So this Durham report comes out again, another show. We read the report. There's no recommendations. We don't know what happened on the back end. We obviously know now that Bill Barr was put in there. Another one. See, I feel the same way about a lot of Trump's hires. You mentioned several of them. Another one, Bill Barr. Another one, Rex Tillerson, was recommended by Condoleezza Rice. You know, like, so you have to look at that. Because I think he should right now be telling us, well, who are you picking as your attorney general? Who's actually going to have the guts to do any of this? You know, right. You say you're going to go in there. I'm very good friends with General Flynn. He says you got to pull out the whole thing. Well, who's going to be on the team to do that? Because right. The team that he picked last time, they, you know, it looks like at this point, probably 4 or 5 people in there actually were on Trump's, you know, agenda. And the rest of them were there just to block it or put in other things. So, you know, we do have that coming up. Now we have this whole thing where things are trickling out about Epstein and people keep saying, well, when's the list coming out? I've been on this following this since 2008 from Palm Beach on. There is no list, but there's lots of evidence. And the list makes itself if you go look through the filings. But we keep having filing after filing where names are coming up, big, giant, powerful people all the way, you know, all over. And yet people are still like, when's the list coming out? I feel like the Epstein case is another distraction. First of all, it's very important. Second of all, they've been sitting on it at least since 2008, but certainly since well before Trump was elected. At this point, I just feel like anyone that defers to that is being somewhat lazy because, you know, there's plenty of evidence out about Epstein, but nobody covers it.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Epstein and Barr because two things. If you Google Epstein Barr, two things will come up. One will be Barr has connections to Epstein at a certain point. Yeah. And, you know, whether it's small or not, I mean, that doesn't make him guilty, but it is interesting. And there's something called an Epstein Barr virus, which is just kind of just random. It's pretty like wild how the world works like that. But yeah, I think with the Barr stuff, I don't mind that Trump makes mistakes. Like, I'm not someone that's like, oh, you didn't do a perfect job. Yeah. Obviously, no one does. But with Trump, the thing that as a voter and an analyst that annoys me is like he's complained about Bill Barr 100 times. If I hired Bill Barr and I messed up, it's one tweet. My bad. Next time I'll do better because I'm responsible. He didn't put himself there. You picked him. So it's like the fact that Trump complains about it so much just kind of shows like a lack of self-accountability, like as if nothing's ever his fault when he was the one who hired him. And with Epstein, here's another thing. I mean, maybe this isn't how it works, but if the Republicans really cared when, you know, Epstein got arrested under Trump's reign, you know, can't they put a few FBI or CIA guys to like watch his cell? You know what I'm saying? With all the taxpayer money, the fact that that happened when Republicans had the presidency, like how bad did they really want to expose this stuff? Because it's like, oh, he died. Like, oh, you know, it was a story for a week. And then it just moved on where I would think that they could put a few extra people be like, yo, this is a big deal. Let's put a few extra cameras and like have a few extra guys. The fact that all happens, I think you're right that there's something more going on. It's a lot harder to do these things. And there are some people that are probably even above the people that we talk about that have all of these people on a stranglehold. And, you know, some of the Republicans are just kind of like going through the motions and clearly either they're afraid of doing something or they're in on it and just, you know, it's not worth the risk.
Right. Now you also, because you are a very successful recording artist, you've dealt a lot with Hollywood, as I was out there for 17 years myself, And there is an implosion, in my opinion, going on that people that don't really see it don't realize. But I believe that Hollywood is burning itself to the ground. What I'm told, people that used to be able to raise $50 million to shoot a movie can't get 10 cents. There is no, they are making no money. Only the alternative people that put out stuff like you themselves are making any money. And we are at a point where they're holding on for dear life. Yet Hollywood, I believe, is a big problem, and they're in our faces, and it's not stopping. And you point out a lot the demonic stuff. They just had this show come out this week, Idol, after Euphoria. I mean, this is straight up like demonic, really, really destructive content. And I don't know if a lot of it is even being created anymore by humans. There's a writer's strike, because I'm a writer. So there's a writer's strike going on right now. When I was there with the writer's strike in 2009, it was devastating. Right now, it's not making a difference at all. And we also have a whole, there's a pending SAG strike coming up because of AI. And they're not even really pushing that yet. What is your feeling about the future? I think the only option is decentralization. I happen to think, and I say this to people, the real Hollywood mafia is distribution. The people that actually are the godfathers that can strike down anything. You can make a movie all you want, but if nobody's putting it out there, it's not going anywhere. Do you see a future of decentralized Hollywood in terms of music and film and all of that? Because I think that model has to be broken. I'm seeing some people try, but I wonder if you're seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think your optimism, I see it where, you know, the movie industry, they're not interesting, funny, comedic anymore. And they're trying so hard to push an agenda that they're not making as much money. They're probably not raising as much money. People have competition. There's Rumble, there's Facebook, there's TikTok, there's podcasts. So people don't have to watch it. People like Netflix are crushing it because they have, you know, this new digital platform. Daily Wire's raising a fortune because of the What is a Woman documentary really helped them get a lot of subscribers. So yeah, I don't see them as having that much power anymore. It's definitely a good thing. With me in the industry, like it never was a thing for me because when I was 20, I had a meeting with a big label and they had said something along the lines of they were trying to mold me in a certain direction, like subtly, and I wouldn't do it. So I made the decision early on that I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say things I don't believe and be someone I'm not. And it's funny because I feel very, I would say, I don't know the word, but I'm happy to see that this actually worked long term. And now they're in this weird bubble where they're fake and nobody cares. So it's like, haha, I feel like I have the last laugh. It's like, I didn't know when I made that decision that it would actually work, but I did believe in myself. And I'm like, I don't see that as long term because it's not authentic. And I feel like that was the right decision when it wasn't popular. So now you have artists and even people that do stuff that are now doing the right thing for the wrong reasons. And, you know, they're like, oh, this is how you hit number one on iTunes. You know, you could do this and that. They see people like Tom McDonald crushing it. And, you know, one of my friends dropped a Boycott Target song that hit number one on the charts. So now I feel like we've actually turned the culture a little bit. And now we're going to have people just emulate it just because they think it's more popular. So yeah, as much power as they still have financially, like there's way too much competition, whether it be the Joe Rogans, the Russell Brands, yourself, Rumble's doing a great job working with Dana White. You know, that's a massive draw. So I think even the YouTube policy, they now you're allowed to question the election on YouTube. Is that because Rumble's destroying them and there's other platforms? Is it because it's over? They don't care. I don't know, but I do feel like they're feeling the heat. And as much as people probably shouldn't trust Elon Musk, he's done a great job with Twitter as far as what his competitors are doing. And now he's putting the pressure on them also. So yeah, I see it as like all the things they did are kind of coming to an end to some extent. And it wasn't for a forever thing. I do see decentralization kind of just working naturally.
Yeah. And you were on the forefront. I read a couple things about you that early on when they were coming after you, when you were, you know, just putting your stuff out there by yourself and getting huge views on YouTube. You know, I was in that. I was a writer, but I was on the other side of getting to a point where I was working. And then you'd go into pitch meetings in the mid 2000s and they'd be like, well, you know, I really like this, but can you change that? Or can you change this? Or we're going to option the project, but we're going to give it to this writer. And you'd look up the writer and be like, but they never worked before. Who are these people? Where are they coming from? And there was a real purging of anyone that wasn't going along. That was probably around the time that they were trying to sign you and being like, okay, we're going to mold you into this. But now we're at a place where AI, they're trying to scare people with AI. Because my feeling on AI is it's here, it's been here, it's been developed for decades. anyone that thinks that any of this is new doesn't understand that we hear about it 20 years after it's perfected, well, as they're trying to roll it out. But a lot of people are scared of AI. They feel like, and listen, I understand that Elon Musk, I know what they're saying, because, you know, it's funny. I talk a lot about with some people about predictive programming out of Hollywood. And I look back, if you go watch like War Games or the original Terminator, and now it's like our lives, like that is real. So obviously they've had the idea for a long time. But a lot of people are scared that AI is going to replace talent. Is going to replace actors, is going to replace musicians, graphic graphic designers, all of that. I still believe, and this happened when I got out of film school. It was around the time that George Lucas and Sony put out a camera that replaced film, basically. It shot as well as, like most people, I'm a little older. I came up on, you still had to shoot on 35 and 16. And then this camera came out like in the early 2000s. And it was like, now you don't. Now, and then it became, now it's all digital. What is your feeling about AI and the future, not just in the arts, but a lot of people, there's a whole fear factor around it. And I think we have to master AI for good and use it. But what's your take?
Yeah, I try not to fear. Like, I, even with like war, people are like, World War III, we're going to get nuked. Like, I don't buy into the fear of anything. It is what it is. I try to only fear God and fear, you know, like sometimes people fear doing the right thing more than they fear doing the wrong thing. And that becomes a problem where they're like, aren't you scared of doing the right thing? I'm like, aren't you scared of, you know, being forced masked for 5 years because you're not willing to stand up? That's also scary. So I'm not scared of AI, but I do see its power. Some of it's good. I mean, you know, I work by myself and I could never find someone to do lyrics or do pop-up, you know, text. And now AI does it in a minute and it can do it on a reel or a video. And you're like, wow, it does it better than a human. It's kind of creepy, but it's good. There's other uses of it that are good, but also like anything, it's like having a lot of food in the fridge. You know, you don't want to be a glutton with it. So I'm not afraid of it, but I do see it is power. And I think it is going to replace a lot of people in some categories. But here's the big thing for myself and others. Like I'll use an example. When I started rapping, because of the skin color I am, when I used to rap in high school, the people's first reaction is always like, oh, he shouldn't rap because he's white, or, you know. But then once I would gain their respect, I told myself I have to be that much better, that much realer, to the point where I'm so good at freestyling that I'm in the, you know, in the hood and people are like, oh, that's fire. Like, I didn't expect that out of you. So life is not fair. And, you know, you got to be irreplaceable and good enough where with AI, yeah, if you're just going through the motions and you're easy to replace, it can replace you. 9 out of 10 writers, it probably can replace. I asked it a question recently. I said, my friend had it. And I said, if I criticize Trump's vaccine sales, does that mean I like Joe Biden? And it was like, no, that doesn't, it made a better answer than most people in politics. They're like, you must be a liberal. So it's like, if you act like an NPC, you will get replaced, or someone could go around it. But as a writer, if you have, you know, talent, comedy, uniqueness, if you lean into who God made you instead of trying to be everyone else, I think you'll be irreplaceable, because AI can only regurgitate what everyone else has done, and it compiles everything ever and then spits it out. But if you're yourself, then you are not replaceable. So I think it's going to test people and make people work harder. And if it does end up terrible, you know, I'm still not afraid. It's just like, this is the world we live in. What's the point of being afraid of it? You know, it's happening either way. So why should I be like, like, it is what it is. I didn't ask for it, but it's here.
Oh, wow. You're awesome. I'm so excited I found you. I'm telling you, I was bummed for a long time, and then I never got back my channel, and then they couldn't find it and they couldn't verify me. So I started over on Twitter. But the good news about starting over is that I might never have found you. And I think you're awesome. And I really do. I think you're, and we need people to be able to reach the younger generation and kind of, you know, do what you're saying. Give them something to then latch onto. They're not doing that. And you are trying to. Can you tell my audience how they can follow you, where they can find you? I highly recommend you not only follow him, but check out his music. It's really, like he said, he looks like that, and you listen to his music and you're like, wow, anyone can do anything.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. So dreamrarelinks.com is the easiest place. My Instagram's Dream Rare. My Twitter's Legendary Energy. But if you go to Dream Rare Links, DreamRareLinks, dreamrarelinks.com, it's got all my stuff, my podcast, my videos. And that's the thing too. Sometimes like on Twitter, I'll get into it with people, or even like, you know, in my live streams, I'll always read comments and stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, I think self-awareness and self-accountability is king. And whether you disagree with who I'm voting for, I don't even know yet, or who you're voting for, you know, crushing it in your own life is still possible. There's a lot of blessings nowadays. And I think that politically, a lot of people think that like just like worshiping somebody is a good strategy. I don't see it that way. I think that you should use your vote as leverage. And even if you like Trump more than RFK and DeSantis, make him work for it a little bit and make him see the things that DeSantis and Trump do better and be like, yo, DeSantis hires better, RFK is better on pharma. Make him adapt those policies and actually follow through. That's all we really can do as citizens. And we have to believe our morals and the Constitution more than we believing that the guy is going to do. Like, that's not a solution, in my view, politically. So just, you know, I think we have so much leverage. It would be a shame to waste it. But yeah, Dream Rare on Instagram, dreamrarelinks.com. Appreciate you for having me on. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, I look forward to seeing your stuff as well.
Great. Thank you so much. I think you're amazing. And keep up the great work. And, you know, if we need people out there to wake up a next generation, you are one guy who's definitely doing it. Thank you. I'll see you again.
Thank you so much. Appreciate Thanks. You.
Hey, Patriot pals. So happy that you're looking into gold and silver and protecting your savings for whatever comes ahead. Beverly Hills Precious Metals is our good friend, and we've been working with them for a long time. So you'll be getting a call from them. We'll also follow up here at the Mel Kay Show because we want to make sure that you're taken care of and you're protected. If you have any questions, please let us know. Right now is the time. There's so much information coming. There's so much chaos. We just want all the Patriots out there to be sure that they are protected, they are moving forward, and that we get through the storm together and safe. Whatever may come, just know we, the people of the United States, will prevail. God wins, and protect yourself. And please get in touch with us if you have any questions. So Beverly Hills Precious Metals, they're the best. They'll be in touch. We'll be in touch. You be in touch with us. Let's do this together.
I'm offering a novel approach that could reduce the complications and even chances of getting infections.
Well, certainly I admired Dr. Zelenko's courage. He was always very honest. He was a hero as far as I'm concerned, and always admired him, appreciated everything he said and did, taking a stand for truth. And he was right. That's the bottom line.
I liked outpatient family medicine, preventive medicine, and trying to keep people away from destructive patterns of behavior over time, and this way prevent them from ending up in the hospital.
So that's where we give people hope and peace of mind, knowing that if you take the Zelenko Labs products on a daily basis, we're going to back it up with the Z-Care promise to connect you with a telehealth visit for free with a licensed physician in all 50 states.
You can take your own care into your own control, into your own hands.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm excited to announce my original My Slippers are back in stock. You've made them a huge success, and now I've added smaller sizes, larger sizes, wide sizes, and all new colors. And with your promo code, you still save $90 a pair. Not only that, I'm having the biggest closeout sale ever on our sandals and slides for as low as $19.98. What makes my slippers different is my exclusive four-layer design that you're not going to find in any other slippers. My slippers' patented layers make them ultra-comfortable, extremely durable, and they help reduce stress on your feet. Wear them anytime, anywhere. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen now. Use your promo code to save $90 on my original My Slippers, or for as low as $19.98, you can get our sandals or slides. Quantities won't last long, and with my 60-day money-back guarantee, you can rest assured they'll be the most comfortable footwear you'll ever own.